We're talking about you being able to appropriately get your car fixed. And I want to remind you that it's really important that you are an integral part of that. Not too long ago, a lady came in and told us that she had an air conditioning problem. She wanted us to check out her air conditioning. So we told her that she would spend between $75 and $125 to have us check out her air conditioning, and that we would determine what it was that was causing her car not to blow cold air. As we ask her other questions, like, when does it do it? Hot, cold, fast, slow, city driving, highway driving. She really didn't have some very good answers. Now, sometimes that's because it's the husband's car. Sometimes that has nothing to do with the person that's standing at the front counter. Sometimes wives bring their husband's cars in, and sometimes husbands bring their wife's car in. Sometimes they don't have all the answers. But it's really important to have the answers. So we checked out the air conditioning system, and the Freon level was completely full. The pressures were perfect, and the air was coming out of the center vent at 48 degrees, and we want something less than 55. So we checked the high-pressure switch and the low-pressure switch, and we checked to make sure that the mode door, which is the door underneath the dash, would redirect the air conditioning both to the defrost mode, if that's where we wanted it, or to the center vent, or to the floor, three different places we can push air through. And it did. So after about 30, 35 minutes, we couldn't determine what was causing this car's air conditioning to fail. And the only thing we had to work on was, my air conditioning's broken. So we decided to take it for a drive. And during the drive, two things happened. Number one, the check engine light came on. And number two, the air conditioning quit. So when we got back to the shop, we asked the computer, why did you turn the air conditioning on or off? And the computer said, in so many words, it doesn't talk to us like I'm talking to you right now. But in so many words, the air conditioning or the computer said, I'm shutting it off because I see the car is overheating. And we look at the dash and there is no gauge. So we then began to look and we determined that the water temperature is running about 240 in the engine according to the coolant sensor. So we used some external pieces of equipment and we tested the thermostat. Not the thermostat, but the water flow coming out of the engine, and it was verified that the water temperature coming out of the engine was 245 or so. So then we fed a false signal to the coolant sensor and said, really, I'm only at 195. And at that point, when we told the computer we're really only 195, the computer then turned the air back on. So we knew we had a problem, but we knew that the reporting device to the computer, the coolant sensor, was actually telling the truth. So we then determined that the thermostat was sticking shut, and it would intermittently release and then stick shut, release and stick shut, which would explain later why the car had intermittently had air. So you can see that the real keys here were that the check engine light was on, and that the air conditioning would come and go. And typically, the air conditioning would be fine if I was just driving around the neighborhood, but if I got on the freeway or if I started to work in the hot summer days, then that would change. You can see how that would have sent us in a different direction, especially had we known that the check engine light would come on. And we would have looked at the computer and said, why are you turning the check engine light on? And the computer could say a whole lot of things. It could say to us, I have a problem with the high pressure in the air conditioning system. And that would indicate that the condenser could be plugged. It could indicate that the fans weren't working, the cooling fans, the electric cooling fans weren't working. It could indicate that the freon charge was too full, that somebody had overcharged the system. So the long and short of it was is that later on we determined that the customer did have the thermostat replaced and the car was repaired. It turned into an ugly kind of a situation because the customer felt like that she didn't have to pay for the diagnostic process because all it was a thermostat. And of course, we did diagnose it right, and I think that we came in underneath our estimate. Well, I know we came in underneath our estimate. But the idea is that's how important communication is. Let me give you another good example of what it's like when the customer standing in front of you may not know all the answers, and that's you see, we're talking about the exchange of information for diagnostic dollars, because that's really what it's all about. It's all about the diagnostic dollars. Lady comes in and says, I want you to tune up my car and align my car. And we ask her why. Because typically on a tune-up, there are symptoms. And typically when there's an alignment, there's symptoms. And she says, that's just what I was told to have you do. So we tuned up the car, replaced the spark plugs, looked at the air filter. It was fine. We replaced the fuel filter. Everything else looked fine. No computer codes. And we aligned the front end. So the husband picked up the car, and he was back within minutes. And he says, you know, you guys didn't do a very good job because I still have both problems. And I said, okay, well, let's start over, because who's the primary driver of this car? And he says, I am. And I says, okay, well, that kind of explains everything. I said, let me take a drive with you. So we're driving down the road, and he says, see that? Feel that? See that? Feel that? And I said, yes, sir, that's a vibration. And he goes, why didn't you fix that on the car when you did the alignment? And I said, well, that's because you had me working on the wrong end of the car. The vibration that you feel, sir, let me ask you, do you feel it through the steering wheel or the seat of your pants? And he says, no, the seat of my pants. And I says, likewise, I do too here in the passenger seat. So as a result of that, you had me working on the front end of the car when really you have a bad tire on the back end of the car. And if you would have just told us, check the vibration at 45 to 60 miles an hour, we would have found that back tire. But we were aligning the front end when really the vibration was caused by a tire in the back. Now, at this point, he smiled, and we were getting along just fine, and we to this day, we get along. But he goes, okay, Mr. Smarty Pants, what about this? And as we're driving down the road, this is what the engine was doing. It would go, like that. So the engine had this little up and down movement to it. So I said, I can fix that from inside the car. I don't even need to open up the hood. And he goes, okay, Mr. Smarty Pants, do it. And I shut off the air conditioning. And it went away. And he goes, so what does that tell you? And I said, you're low on refrigerant. You're low on Freon. So all you have to do really is to let us have the symptoms. I've got this problem with the car when I travel down the road and the idle goes up and then down, even though I have my foot on the throttle. And any one of my guys could have picked that up real quick. So we went back, we put a pound of refrigerant in it, and we took the right rear tire off, put the spare on, and we sent him on his way. We didn't charge him for that because obviously he had paid for a bunch of money. But here's the idea. The idea is that if you diagnose the car and then tell us how to fix it, I think the majority of the shops in town would understand and would agree that if you misdiagnose your car, then you have to pay for the misdiagnosis. And likewise, I'm telling you unequivocally that if a shop misdiagnoses your car, they have to pay for the bad diagnosis. So if I would have told that lady that it was a thermostat and that didn't fix it, I would be obligated to give her back the thermostat money and the labor associated with that, because clearly I didn't do a good job. Clearly I didn't do a good work. Clearly my diagnosis was defective. If she offered me another opportunity to fix your car, this is the first lady now, then, of course, I would take advantage of that opportunity, and I wouldn't charge her more diagnosis. I'd go back in and see where I made my mistake. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. If you have
Mark, 1 minute, 1 minute.
And from there, we're going to go to your calls as soon as you give us a call. Let you be the one that drives it. Now, when we come back, one other thing I want to talk about is I want to talk about how important it is that we look at the parts that are installed in our car, and while many of you believe that you only want to have Toyota parts, BMW parts, Chevrolet parts, Ford parts installed in your car, I want to suggest to you that we can do better if you'll just let us. There are, just like everything else, there's three different kinds of parts. So when we come back, we'll talk about the three different kinds of parts. My name's Mark Salem. This is Intelligent Conservative Talk, AM 960 KKNT.
Hey, Mark Salem. You going for your annual physical? Do you want a kid?
I'm really proud of all the millions of tires that are...
The mechanic raised up from under my hood and he shook his head and said...
Well, welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem. It's 10:34 on a wonderful, kind of cold Saturday morning. The name of our show is Under the Hood, and we talk about cars. We talk about your cars, your car problems, and I have no agenda other than to make you the very best consumers I can. and to help you understand car repair as best you can. When I say that this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Kurtz Auto, I mean that these guys actually bring this show to you. Kurtz Auto Repair has years of experience working on all kinds of car, both gas, diesel, domestic, and imports. Kurtz Auto is located at I-17 and Bell Road in Phoenix, and since they opened in 1992, they've been a member in good standing with the Better Business Bureau. If you live near I-17 and Bell and you need a car repair shop that's honest and that's on my list of the best car repair shops in Phoenix, then give Kurtz a try and tell him Mark sent you. Okay, let's go to the phones first. And Ken, you're up next. Ken, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Yeah, good morning. I've got a 94 Honda Accord, four-cylinder automatic. I replaced motor mounts. The idle is really low on the car. And if I put on the brake at a light and hit the gas a little bit and bring it up to 800 RPMs, it smooths right out. The car runs fantastic. It's got low mileage, 50,000 miles on the car.
Okay.
I don't know where to go from here.
Well, what we need to know is what you need to know is this: in a fuel injected car, we make the idle go higher or lower by introducing air to the engine. So I want you to pretend like that I give you a 1-inch piece of PVC and I told you to put your thumb over the top of this piece of pipe. Okay.
Right.
Now I want the car to idle fast. And in order for it to idle fast, you've got to take your thumb completely off that pipe and give that motor lots of air. Now, I say, Ken, bring it down to idle. Then you're going to slide your thumb right over that piece of pipe slowly until the idle sets where you want, except this is done 60 to 300 times a second. In your fuel-injected car, we have throttle blades that'll get dirty, and we have what we call minimum idle authority. That's nothing you can do by yourself.
I know. You can't adjust it.
Exactly. And everybody turns that screw, which means we've got to go back in, and here's why. We have to synchronize the RPM with the throttle position sensor signal. And on top of all of that, we need to set the throttle blades to a default position. So we have to synchronize three things to give you the best idle. Anybody worth their salt has done this a lot of times. You should not spend but maybe $60 to $100 to have your minimum idle authority and this system checked out. And more times than not, more than 50% of the time, the fix is in the diagnosis. Now, that means that while we're there, we're going to fix it, and it's all included in the diagnostic fee because you don't really know if you fixed it until you fix it. In your case, too, the air conditioning has a separate solenoid, and when you turn on the air, now we're going to open up that air orifice to kick the idle up another 50, 100 RPMs to compensate for the load from the air conditioning compressor. So that's all what has to go on. But again, it's not very expensive.
Yeah, when I turn on the air, it's like being in a Mixmaster. It drops down so low on me.
Yeah. Now, when you replaced the motor mounts, did you do one, two, three, or four?
We did them all, four.
Okay. All right, good for you. Good for you. And that would eliminate any motor grounding problems that will transfer the vibration to the engine into the car that gives people the idea that there's an idle problem. And I'm glad you told me that in advance because I was going to ask you if the idle changes between reverse, neutral, and drive. But I already know the answer to that.
2 minutes.
You just put the motor mounts in it. Well, thank you very much, Ken, and thank you for calling. Let's go over to Carlo. Carlo, you're up next. Give me your question quickly, buddy.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, I have a 2008 Challenger SRT. It uses that mobile 1.040 weight. What else can I put in there besides that?
You can put any full synthetic, and you could use a 0.20, you could use a 0.30, or you could use a 0.40. The synthetics are going to go long-term.
Right.
Where the semi-synthetics, a blended oil, will be half as much. For instance, well, I'll tell you what. I'm running up against my clock. You stay right there.
Okay.
I'm going to come back and talk to you, okay? So let me just take a quick break. And also, Lance, you stay there too because you're right after we get done talking with Carlo. My name is Mark Salem. The phone number is 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And by the way, that Challenger, she's pretty fast, isn't she? Yes, they are. We'll be back.
This is Bob Jones, owner of Quality Transmission Service in Tempe.
For a minute. I'm sorry.
Over the years, we've noticed we get two types of cut.
Mechanic raised up from under my hood and he shook his head.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 43 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and you're listening to AM 960 KKNT. where we're talking about cars this hour, every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock, we're here talking about cars. Did you know that the frame or unibody structure and the integrity of your vehicle is as important to your car as the foundation on your home? Phoenix Body Works uses the finest frame and unibody measuring equipment in the auto repair industry. That's important because when you get your vehicle repaired after an accident, unfortunately, I've seen many shops let the vehicles leave with bent frames, and they're obviously not repaired correctly. However, Phoenix Body Works will make sure your car is put back together the right way, on time, at an affordable price with quality parts. Phoenix Body Works is hassle-free and insurance company-friendly. That's important. They get along with the other guys. They know how to work with insurance companies, and they're located at 19th Avenue, a half block north of Deer Valley Road. 19th Avenue and Deer Valley, just a half block north. So if you need some paint and body repairs, whether it's minor or major, or some paint, then give Phoenix Body Works a try. They're at 623-582-1434. Let's go back and talk with Carlo about his 08 Challenger. The three different kinds of oils we have is a conventional oil, and the conventional oil has an oil change interval of about 3,000 to 4,000 miles. Conventional oil has a window of protection from 30 below zero to 325 degrees Fahrenheit. Now put your hands out in front of you about 10 inches apart. Okay, your left hand represents 30 below zero. Your right hand represents 325 Fahrenheit. Now, semi-synthetic, I want you to move your hands outward another inch. That's the protection of a semi-synthetic. It goes to about 40 below zero, 45 below zero, and upwards to about 400 degrees Fahrenheit. Full synthetic, move your hands out further. Move them out a ways. 60 below zero and up to 500 degrees. So let me ask you something, Carlo. When was the last time you were in 60 below weather, buddy?
Maybe one time in my life. Yeah.
And 60 below zero. And I want to tell you something, no matter how fast and how perfect that Challenger is, that motor will never reach 500 degrees. And if it does, it'll only do it once and never again.
Right.
You, the protection, I think you'll agree, is we need from about zero to about Fahrenheit to an engine temperature of about 250 to 300 degrees. Zero to 300 degrees is the area we need to protect in. Unless, of course, you live in Pine Top or Payson or Flagstaff or up on the I-40 area where it gets down below. Now we're at 30 below zero, and we need to be up to 300 degrees Fahrenheit of an engine temperature. You can use anything. The 040 tells me this. Zero is good way below zero, and 40 degrees is going to protect you up there when you're out at Firebird and you're running on, what is it, Friday night run what you brung kind of things. That's when you're going to need the 40 weight. But you can use anything. You know, you could use a 020, a 030. I don't know if anybody else pours or creates a 040. But you,
no, nobody does.
All right, and you don't have to use Mobil 1 because here's why. Because first of all, your car doesn't know. It doesn't have a brain to know if you're using a semi-synthetic, a full synthetic, or a conventional oil. It doesn't care. It only, the oil's there long or short to protect your engine. So it's really up to you. You can change your brands around. I would change them to a variety of name brands and make sure that none of them cause an oil consumption problem. And once you find something you like, I can tell you on all my hot rods, I'm running a 030 in them. And I'm perfectly happy with 030, okay?
I mean, thank you very much. Appreciate your help.
You're welcome. You're welcome. All righty, let's zip on over to Lance. Lance, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, how's it going, Mark?
Good.
Hey, with that synthetic oil, why do we need real oil if we could just have synthetic? That's kind of weird.
Well, synthetic is pretty expensive.
Oh, I'm just kidding. Hey, do you, I have a question. I got a 2000 Astro van, and the high motor for the fan went out, and I heard you mention something about that before, but I didn't catch the whole thing.
Okay. All right. Well, there's speeds 1, 2, and 3 run off the switch through a blower motor resistor and then feed the fan. 1, 2, and 3. Speeds 4 just goes from the switch, sends battery voltage straight to the fan. So that's high. So you probably have a high blower relay, and I want you to picture I want you to take your left hand and make a C out of it with two fingers, okay? And I want you to take your right hand and stick it in the C, okay? So now you have a contact point. If you lift your right hand up, you touch the top of the contacts. That's speeds 1, 2, and 3. When you go to high, bring your right hand down and touch your thumb, boom, you've hit the high-speed fan. So here's what I would do if I was your technician. I would first take 12 volts off the battery and go directly to the fan to make sure the fan's working. But you said it works okay in 1, 2, and 3, so that I'm still going to check it. I want to hear the fan. I want to touch the fan. I want to make sure it's working and it's not drawing an excessive amount of amps. Then I'm going to go to the high blower relay. I'll get my words out. High blower relay, and I'm going to take the high blower relay, and I know that I've got to have power coming in and power going out. I'll have red coming in and purple going out, and then I'll have a trigger, and the trigger comes from the fan switch. So I'll look for the trigger, and if it's there, but I don't have anything going to the purple wire, boom, I'm done. It's a relay. If you want to guess, it's a cheap guess, go get yourself a high blower relay, and that should take care of it. All righty, I want to talk to you a little bit more about oil real quick and tell you a funny story. Years and years ago, Valvoline hired us because they sold a whole bunch of go-karts to a whole bunch of big companies. They were going to race them on Central Avenue. They were going to race them in this pre-described track on Central Avenue around Park Central Mall. And me and my group of bandits were chosen to be the pit crews for all these companies that were going to have a drawing to let somebody drive their car. During that process, Valvoline says, we're going to give you one of the cars to drive, but you may not win, Mark Salem. You may not win. I said, yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir. So I took about 20 of my employees, and we went up there, and we helped everybody get their car started and taught them about what they needed to do, and we changed their oil. But during this time we're changing their oil, my guys are kind of smirking and laughing and stuff. So we're in this, you know, we get into the quarterfinals, and our car gets into the quarterfinals and then gets into the finals. And I say to Eddie, who's driving it, I said, if you win this race, you better just keep on driving because I'm going to get a hold of you and I'm going to tie your ears in a knot and there's going to be big trouble. You cannot win this race. He says, I won't, boss, I won't. So we're in the final. The car's running fast. He's third. So I give him the sign, back off of one. He goes back to fourth. We're about two laps from the end. And then the first, the second, and the third car crash. And he wins. And I am really mad. So they bring his car into the winner's circle, and I am the head tech guy. And I've decided, early on, I decided that we're going to tack these cars to see what the full throttle is. So I had already done a bunch of testing, and I had lifted up all the backs of all the cars, and they had like 3,200 RPM. Wide open throttle, you lift the back up, get the back tire spinning, you pull the throttle hard as you can, 3,200, 3,200, 3,300, 3,100, 3,400, right around 3,200, 3,300 is where everybody was at. So I walked over here, and Eddie knew that he might as well have been in Casa Grande because I was going to get a hold of him. I picked up the back of his car, my car, and I stick the tack needle on it. I pulled the throttle, and it went up to like 5,800. 5,800. Those cheating son of a guns. So I say to myself, So I disqualify my own car, and I get everybody else 1, 2, and 3. What I didn't know was is that the guys had been talking to Valvoline, and Valvoline had said that they were going to send him a special oil, and the oil was a zero weight. It was a brand new zero weight. It wasn't a 0, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, and it wasn't a 0, 10, 15, 20. It was the consistency of water. Well, my guys decided that it would be funny if our car had a zero weight in it, which is the consistency of water, and we put peanut butter in all the other cars, which was 30 weight. Needless to say, it's funny today, but it wasn't funny back then. But that gives you an idea of where we're coming with oil. Right now, today, that zero is being used in qualifying in NASCAR and in some IndyCar races. But those guys, those old-time guys with gray hair, they still won't put that water in their engines for the big race. But they'll qualify with the zero oil, but they'll still run a 10, 30, or a 30-weight, or a 40-weight, or a 50-weight when they're running the race. Now, Firebird's different because the quarter mile is different. We put lots of stress on those engines, 1,000 horsepower motors and stuff like that. That's a different oil. But when you're talking about a road track, a road race, then you believe it or not, some of those guys are using oils that you will see in the next 5 years. And I suspect that in the next 5 years, we're going to see a zero weight, and that zero weight will protect you well. It's going to be a tough change for those of us that have gray hair, but it's going to be the truth. All righty. You can always email me at mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. And I'll tell you why marksalem.com is important. You can go there and find the best car repair shops list. It's a list that has stood the time since 1988. We started the list in 1988. We've actually had one out of every 50 people apply that made it. And we've recently removed two shops from our list for misbehaving. So it's not a list that you can get on and pay your money. It's not a list that you can. It's been around since 1988. These guys are the best of the best. And that's what's important. Now, if you're a Facebook person, then why don't you friend me? My name is Mark Salem. So Facebook.com/Mark Salem. And we do post car stuff on there. I'm not going to send you messages about my kids and my grandkids and stuff like that. We talk about cars. For instance, that new recall that Honda just came out with. They said that the explosive mechanism in the airbags is violent, too violent, and it's throwing plastic and other pieces of the dashboard and of the steering wheel at people. Instead of protecting them, it's causing, I'm thinking, some minor damage to the people that they wouldn't otherwise have taken over. But that's the way it is with every car. You got to understand that airbag on the passenger side is going to pop, and we have to blow. It's kind of like an injection module kind of thing. We have to blow the cover off in order to have the airbag come out. But I want to tell you what I think about airbags. Here's the question. You're going 60 miles an hour, and somebody pulls out in front of you. Something happens in front of you. Maybe you run into an elk. Do you want your face to hit a big, fat pillow? Or do you want your face to hit the windshield or the dashboard? That's really the bottom line. That's just the bottom line, is what do you want your face and your head to hit? And obviously, I think anybody that has a half of brain is going to say, I'd rather have my face and my head hit a big, old, fat pillow. Airbags are a good thing. They come out in 1/10 of a blink of an eye. The electronics associated with popping that airbag in your face before your head hits the steering wheel is amazing technology. It's really, really important to understand that this is a step forward with respect to saving people's lives. But here's what we miss. The seatbelt is an important consideration for the airbag to work. Here's why. If I get hit hard in the left front headlight and I'm driven to my right as the driver, my head's going to the left and my body's going to the left. Now, if the airbag pops and I'm not there, it's not going to help me any. And that's why the seatbelt holds you in place so the airbag can protect you. I can't tell you how many times I've investigated accidents on behalf of law enforcement agencies and insurance companies where I'm the mechanical guy. I'm not the accident reconstructionist, but I see the airbags popped on the driver's side, but the driver was found in the back seat. You see, that airbag didn't help that driver any because he didn't have his seatbelt on. The seatbelt holds you in place so that the side curtain airbags, the front airbags, the passenger side airbags, you're surrounded by a bunch of pillows. But if you're not strapped in,
2 minutes,
you're not going to get the protection you need. So that's why it's important. And, of course, I think we're past the argument about seatbelts and being trapped in a car that's burning and all that kind of stuff. I think we're past all of that. Everybody understands that seatbelts are certainly an important part. And I'll tell you something for you guys like me, the old-timers. It's really important to understand this. It's important to understand that the seatbelt, even without airbags, is an important consideration because, like, guys like my brothers and me, we're all over 200 pounds. We're all big boys. So if we're flying around inside that car and we got our grandkids in there, we can hurt them. So you have to wear your seatbelt, not only for you, but the other people in the car, because you all know that when you have a car wreck, people end up all over. And all those people that get tossed, they're always tossed in front of the rolling car, almost always tossed in front of the rolling car.
1 minute.
That's important. So you're best suited to stay in the car. And if the car's built right, then the roof won't cave in so far, and the doors will protect you, and the frame will protect you, and hopefully at the end of a car collision, you'll be okay. But if you don't have your seatbelt on, you might as well be in a blender, because when that car starts rolling, you're going to pop around in the inside of that car like a bowling ball. And when you do, you could hurt other people. And I can't think of anything worse than to survive a crash like that, knowing that my big body flying through the inside of that car caused death to somebody else. So I just want to remind you of that. I want to remind you of that. Again, Facebook, I'm Mark Salem. You can Facebook me. You can also follow me on Twitter. Again, Mark Salem. And I want to remind you that wearing your seatbelt is very important. So do that for me. And if you have a car question anytime you want, Monday through Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 24 hours a day, give me a call at mark@marksalem.com. I'll see you next Saturday at 11.
This was a paid program and was provided for informational purposes only.
You nailed that out.
All righty. Hey, listen, I'm really sorry that I gave it to you an hour early. Sometimes I just have a brain fart for that shit.
Trinity, you're fine. Don't worry.